This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
For the 2023-2024 season, the West Ham Way podcast is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Green King Sport's venues are showing every televised West Ham fixture over the course of the season. So instead of turning to the internet for a dodgy stream, get your mates together and go down to your local Green King pub and get closer to the action. Green King Sport have just recently launched the Green King Sport Instagram page, which will be the home to fan content, deals and competitions throughout the season. Drop them a follow and you won't just be the first to know about all this, you'll be helping out the West Ham Way.
You're listening to the West Ham Way podcast with Dave and X. Oi, oi!
Hello and welcome to the West Ham Way podcast with myself, Dave Walker, an ex-WHU employee. This week we reflect on our first defeat of the season. Could we have done better against the best team in the world? We talk about Paquetar embracing Guardiola, an outstanding performance from Areola, another contribution from James Ward-Prowse, Paolo Di Canio coming back to East London, and our last ever event at O'Neill's before getting news from X and answering questions from patrons of the West Ham Way. X, home or away, Man City is always a difficult game and Saturday was no exception at the London Stadium. As always, give us your thoughts on the performance and the result.
Obviously, the result was disappointing in the end, having been 1-0 up at half-time, but it's not one that we probably would have expected to get anything on from, realistically. Also, I think we played quite well. It wasn't the greatest performance, but you've got to remember the quality of the opposition. So it was a good performance. We had chances. I thought we were doing really well until Alvarez went off. I think that was a bit of a game changer, that. Obviously, it was 1-1 when he went off, and I think we had chances to, like, we've obviously Zuma's header to actually go in the lead. I think we would have at least got a point if Alvarez had stayed on. Unfortunately, a mistake at the back for the second, and then the third goal, we kind of ran out of steam by then. So I don't think it was a disastrous performance. I mean, it was actually a good performance in the grand scheme of things. You were obviously disappointed to come away with nothing, and you know, ultimately you do what you have to come away with something for it to be a really good result. But in terms of the performance, I thought it was decent, and you just move on to the next one. We got Man City out of the way now. They're the best team in the world. That's why they have won the Premier League and won the Champions League, and they are the best team in the world, so to give them a good match isn't the end of the world for us. So yeah, I think good performance overall.
Yeah, I agree with that summary. And do you know what, mate, I mean, we all want to win, we all want to have that winner's mentality, and we can all make excuses for losing, but sometimes you just have to give credit where credit's due. And I think we got beaten by the best team on the planet, like you say. Totally agree with that. They dominated possession, had chance after chance. 29 shots, I think they had. The scoreline could have been a lot worse, but not necessarily because we were that bad, but because they were that good. Do you know what I mean? I look at them, and so they should be with the amount of money they've spent. But they are just a terrific side, aren't they? Super.
Yeah,
I mean, exciting to watch. And you're right as well. We had our chances. We did have our chances. And did we give them a game as such? I think to a degree, obviously, to go in at half-time 1-0 up, you can say that. But I think it was inevitable that we were going to lose the game. The more the time went on, they weren't going to keep missing their chances. And in the end, I think it was a fair result, really.
Yeah, and I think you've got to look at the amount of saves Areola made as well. You know, he was by easily the man of the match, and I think that shows that obviously we're backs against the wall, but it's always going to be like that against Manchester City. And I thought there that Doku was brilliant against us as well. He obviously, they've only just signed him in the summer, but he terrorised Shafao for that first goal. And he played brilliantly, and you know, they've added him to the mix now. And you know, Haaland missed a couple that he would have usually scored on another day. So yeah, like, you know, they were the better team. It probably was a fair result for them to win overall, but we gave them a decent match. We've been battered and played off the park by Manchester City before, but that wasn't the case this week. I think we can go into the Liverpool game, and if we can play slightly better than we did against Man City, we can be confident of maybe getting something there, because I don't think Liverpool are in the same league as Manchester City. So we should go into that game with decent hopes. And you know, I saw some people moaning about Moyes, the usual negativity. I think when you play Manchester City, of course, you hope for the upset. But on the grand scheme of things, there's not going to be many teams that do beat Manchester City. You almost write that game off, and it's still been a great start to the season. We're still right up there. And, you know, once we get Liverpool out of the way, there's fixtures coming after that that I think are winnable, and we could be in a really good position come November time.
Yeah, I agree with that. Again, I think if you lose to Man City, but you've had a go, you just have to wipe your mouth and move on, don't you, really? I mean, we got up to a flyer, didn't we? And two things really pleased me about that goal. One, James Ward-Prowse scored it. He continues to impress at West Ham. What a signing he's proving to be. And two, the goal was created by Shufao, who has often had a bit of stick for his crossing ability, but that was a really good assist, wasn't it?
It was. It was a really good cross. I mean, later on in the game, he did two really bad crosses, so that kind of frustrated me. But yeah, in that particular incident, it was those sorts of crosses where he kind of curls them in a bit, he's all right at. It's the when he gets down the wing, and I think sometimes especially when you're on the counter attack, the whole point is speed. So the cross needs to be whipped in along the ground, even if it just ricochets off a defender or something, it can cause havoc. But that's where he lets himself down. The floating crosses are not too bad. It's the whipped ones that he doesn't seem to be able to do as well. And I think whipped crosses are more effective now in the Premier League, particularly when you only play with one forward, and that forward isn't, you know, a 6'3", 6'4" target man, then I think whipped crosses are much better. And unfortunately, that is a big part of his game that I feel could be improved. But yes, on that goal for James Ward-Prowse, it was a great assist. And as I said when we signed him, and I just couldn't believe other fans didn't see this, he is a great signing for us, unbelievable signing. You know, he's contributed a goal or an assist or more in every game he's played this season. And I think, you know, if he carries on like this, averaging either one goal or one assist a game every game, then you're going to be loving that. You know, that contribution is huge, and he should be in the England squad. Part of me is glad he isn't, because it's just an extra risk to get injured or be tired. But in terms of him deserving it, he should do. And you know, he hasn't even scored a free kick yet, so you know, we got that to come. So great signing, and I was really pleased that he got another goal.
Yeah, and it was nice to see Prowse incorporate the crossed hammers in his golf swing celebration as well. Yeah. I like that. Well, you touched upon him earlier on, and one person I was really impressed with on Saturday was Areola. I thought Alfie was different class for two reasons, really. One is that he made a series of phenomenal saves, and two, I don't believe he could have done any better on the goals he conceded. Do you agree with that? I mean, can we put that level of praise on the goalkeeper that's conceded three times in 90 minutes?
Well, yeah, I think so. Like you say, the second goal, possibly there was something not right with that second goal, but blame was probably more towards Agüero for that. But then you look at the communication. I think keeper's probably a bit too slow off his line. Has he communicated with Agüero with where that ball was going? You know, it's debatable. There's been a couple of times this season where Agüero and Areola's communication, when they've both turned around and had a go at each other. So there's something got to be sorted out between those two, because Moyes alluded to it as well. The second goal was a bit soft, but yeah, on the whole, you can't criticise Areola at all, because you know, you think right at the start of the game there was that incident where there was about four attempts, wasn't there? Suchet got one off the line, and then he saved about three, and he did brilliantly. Then he made another two or three brilliant saves after that as well. So yeah, for me, he got the patron overall vote for man of the match quite comprehensively, I think, and yeah. I would agree with that. So yeah, I thought he had a really good game, and I think he is rightfully the number one now. Age is obviously a big factor, but with Fabianski being, you know, 37, 38, but he is the right time for him now. 29, 30. You know, there's no point in moving to West Ham if he's just going to be a backup keeper. So I think we need to keep our faith in Areola now. He's deserved it from the performance. You know, yesterday he played well against Brighton as well. So I think, yeah, well done to him. And hopefully he can keep building on this. The more games he plays, I mean, the more consistent he'll be even beyond that.
Yeah. Well, if you look at their goals, I mean, the first one, very hard to defend against. That Doku is some player, you know.
Rapid speed,
good close control, a defender's nightmare, really. I just thought it was a brilliant goal. You can argue that Schiffel, you know, shouldn't have shown him inside, but it's easier said than done. When you're on that pitch facing a player of that pace and that skill with the clinical finish, I think, again, you just got to give credit where credit's due. I think the slight disagreement I've got with you on the second goal is that I do think Agüero was to blame. And I think the fact that...
Oh, yeah, he's largely to blame. I'm just saying that there's a communication thing there as well.
I don't agree with that. I from Areola's perspective, what is there to communicate if you think your centre-half's going to clear it? You think he's got it? You think he's going to head it out the box? There's not really a lot you can say to him. I just think he's massively mistimed his header, which has allowed Silva through on goal. So for me, that's a mistake on his part. And as for the third, again, you could say we shouldn't have allowed Haaland to peel off like he did, but it is what it is, really, isn't it? I don't think you can put too much criticism on the three goals we conceded when you're playing against that much quality. Frustrating thing, isn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. As I said, Gwen is more to blame for that second goal, but yeah, I think Man City are a different league. I mean, Haaland is unbelievable. I know he missed a couple of easier chances in that game, but he's got everything for a forward. Strength, yeah. Pace, ability in the air, he's agile, like the amount of sort of flying volleys he gets and overhead kicks and stuff. He reads the game so well. You know, he's, you know, you think he's only young still as well. You know, what's he going to be like when he's 27, 28? I mean, this is going to be unbelievable. So yeah, and then like you said, that Doku looked brilliant, and then they've got you know, all the other quality that they've got around them as well. They are a great team. I find them fucking boring to watch at times, I'm going to be honest with you. I know they had all those chances, but just the passing back, I know some people say it's good football because they maintain possession and stuff, but when you're just passing it, defender, back, defender, keeper, midfielder, and it's obviously works because they win everything, but I never particularly look forward to watching Manchester City. Like when they're on TV or when they come to the London Stadium, I don't go, oh, this will be a good game. I never feel like it's going to be a good game. I think they'll score good goals and they'll dominate possession, but it's not going to be that exciting. Not like, you know, the old Arsenal invincible team or the Manchester United team of the 90s. Never feel like that with them, but you can't argue with it because they're so successful with it. So yeah, I just think you write this game off. When you look at the fixture calendar, you don't look at Manchester City home or away and think, right, we need to get any points from this. They're kind of two that you sort of put to the side that you're probably not going to, and then you need to make sure you pick them up at the games where you're meant to pick them up at.
Well, the day wasn't without controversy, because before the game, Paquetá was seen embracing Guardiola, who was close to signing Lucas in the summer. A lot of fans noticed that. A lot of fans were pissed off with that. What are your thoughts?
It's probably not ideal. You know, again, in an ideal situation, you don't want a player to be acknowledging the opposition manager in any form, really, unless they're sort of back in the tunnels where no one can see it, because you want to be fully focused on the game. There's like that classic clip, isn't there, where Gary Neville and Peter Schmeichel are lining up as captains for, I mean, Schmeichel's at Man City at the time, and Schmeichel goes to shake his hand and Neville won't even look at him and just looks straight forward. You know, obviously they were teammates and mates for years and years and years. You kind of want that winning mentality where whoever it is on the opposition, whilst they're your opponents for the next 90 minutes, they're your enemy. And that's ideally the scenario you want to have. If Guardiola's gone up to Paquetá and tried to give him a hug and shake his hand, I think it's difficult for Paquetá to go, no, fuck off, mate, and walk away as well. You have to consider that too. Obviously, he was linked massively with Manchester City, so it's like not great the club he's done it to, but I'm not that bothered by it. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't mean he didn't play well. I thought behind Areola, he was the second best player, I'd have said, and he still wants to play for West Ham. He's not going to Manchester City, at least not now. So it's not great, but it's not as disastrous as some are saying.
I mean, is it the end of the world? No. But I did think it was unprofessional. I thought it was quite desperate on his part, if I'm honest. And I also did think it was disrespectful. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. It's like being called up for your first dance at your wedding, then going to the DJ, it's all right, mate, I'm going to have a dance with my wife's best mate first. Do you know what I mean? You just wouldn't do it.
Quite that extreme.
But it's an example of something not making sense. For me, it didn't make sense. We're about to go to war with the opposition, like you say, and our best player is embracing the opposition's manager, a manager he obviously wants to play for. How is that the best preparation for him going into that war? And what is it, X? And look, I am going to say it. What is it with these fucking players that find it so hard to just be respectful to the club that pays their wages, to the fans that adore them? Why do they find it so hard to just keep their head down, do the right thing, say the right thing, more importantly, not say the wrong thing? And if they want to leave, conduct their business discreetly behind closed doors. And should they get their move, say the right thing to the fan base when the move is done. We've had it with Rice, Arnautovic, Wilshere, Sacco, Payet, and now Paqueta. I mean, why do they find it so hard? When really, let's be honest, it's so easy.
But if he'd done that to another manager, let's just say he'd done it to whoever Luton Town's manager, Edwards, at Luton Town, would there be such a big deal about it? It could be just...
No, wouldn't have been. There wouldn't have been. But that's the problem. It's the context, isn't it?
Yeah.
This manager who has tried to sign him, so the disrespect is coming from him embracing a manager, almost showing desperation that he wants to be a part of Man City. And the fact that he probably has cuddled him because he knows him after having discussions with him. And I just think to do that in the London Stadium before a game in front of your own fans, I think takes the piss a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's not great. It's not an ideal thing to have done. And, you know, you do question why he has done that. And it is obviously for his own self-gain. It doesn't benefit West Ham in any way for him to be friendly to the opposition manager. It's for his own career advancements should, you know, Guardiola try to sign him at another point. So, yeah, it's all obviously self-centred. So it's not good in that respect. But I don't think it affected his performance, like I said, because I think he was the second best player on the pitch for us behind Areola. Maybe Alvarez gave him a run for his money, but he was certainly one of the better players. And I don't think it's going to affect his performance going forward for the rest of the season. You wish he hadn't done it, but I'm not quite having a meltdown over it like some people are.
Well, subject to this betting scandal being put to bed, could he potentially go in January?
I guess so, although they've signed Nunes now, haven't they? So I think they're probably done, I would suggest. And maybe, I don't know what their financial fair play situation is, but I don't think he'll go in January to Manchester City. I haven't asked anyone about it recently, but my sort of gut feeling would be that he wouldn't go in January, no.
Well, it was good to see Paolo Di Canio at the stadium on Saturday, looking at $1 million as always. What would he be worth in today's market at his peak?
Oh, God knows. Shitloads. I still find it amazing. He never played for Italy. Like, he's not actually
incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, when you think how good he was, like, how good must Italy have been for forwards at that time if he can't get in? But I guess the same with Billy Bonds as well. You know, you look at how good he was, and he never did either. And Devonshire and Parks only got one or two caps. So, yeah, I mean, it's great to see him. He's just like, for me, you know, obviously I said to my dad at the ground, like, my dad's player that he used to always go on about, he loved when he was growing up, was Trevor Brookin. You know, that was the one for him, with all the skill and the entertainment value, and, you know, a local lad. Both him and my dad are from Ilford, so there's that connection as well. Whereas for me, obviously, Di Canio was the one that I used to just get so excited about going to games to watch. And I think he was the first player. Obviously, we had players before him, like Hartson, that did really well for us, and, you know, Kitson, and obviously Rio Ferdinand was breaking through and stuff. But I think he was the first player that was really, like, other teams looked at and thought, fucking hell, he's a good player. You know, obviously we had them in Julian Dix, people liked him, but he was like a cult hero. I don't think other fans knew how good Julian Dix was as a player. I mean, I think he was only really maybe appreciated by West Ham fans. You know, West Ham, other fans would have liked maybe Bishop, maybe cotty for his goals at times, but I don't think other fans ever looked at any of our players and thought, wow, what I'd give to see him every week. Whereas we had that with Di Canio, and Di Canio was just such an entertainer. And like I would sometimes think I was going to watch West Ham and I was going to watch Di Canio, because it was almost like two different soap operas going on at the same time. And yeah, I'd just love to meet the fellow. I'm like, you know, of all the stuff we've done with West Ham, and I know you've met him, I've never met him. So one day I would like to. And I spoke to a few people that were at the event that was done with him on Friday, and thankfully from, and on Thursday as well, thankfully from what I've heard, I've got an interesting bit of news on that in my section, but what I heard from them was that whilst his agent was a bit of a pain, which is what we seem to have discovered, himself, Di Canio, was brilliant and a top fella. So it's good to know that he's a humble, nice guy as well.
Yeah, and loves West Ham. Genuinely loves West Ham as well. Yeah. It just inches out of him. And I'm with you. I mean, you know, in those season ticket days when he was there, it got your blood pumping when Upton Park used to sound out. And I don't know the actual official title of the Italian classical music, but the Paolo Di Canio song.
Yeah.
And it got everyone singing. And he was a soap opera in himself. And even at that age when I used to watch him on the school playground, I don't know how I didn't get bullied for this, to be honest with you, but I used to wear my shorts back to front, as he often did. I had a girl's hairband around my wrist when I played, as he often did. And he was just a hero at West Ham. Absolutely adored the man. And you're right, how he didn't play a single minute for Italy is absolutely flabbergasting. Do you remember a time when he was actually rumoured to have qualified to play for England because of his
sister? He hadn't
played for Italy. Yeah. I mean, how did he not get a game for England in which country?
Oh, no, it's just ridiculous, isn't it? I think maybe his when he pushed the referee and maybe they held things like that against him because they didn't pick Julian Dix because he had a skinhead once. So, he pushed the referee over, and obviously there was the odd questionable link to his political beliefs in Italy and stuff. So maybe those things, what counts against him. But yeah, in terms of ability, he was the best player I think I've ever seen. I mean, people talk about Paille, and obviously Paille was definitely up there, and people talk about Tevez as well. I don't know, I think of like the sort of more modern day equivalent, but there was just something about Paolo that was just, for me, puts him head and shoulders above. I mean, it was probably the passion for the badge, the flamboyancy, his emotionalness that he brought, you know, that he, not only did he score so many goals, but he created so many chances for other players. And I think because other players didn't take those chances, you tend to forget how good some of those assists would have been as well if the players had scored them. So, you know, he was just, brilliant. I mean, ideally, if you want to put a couple of criticisms his way, which we try to be balanced on his show, I'm not sure at times, particularly under the Roda reign, whether he was 100%, what's the word, productive to a good environment at the club at times. But when he was at his peak and everything was going well and he was playing at the top of his game, then there was no one better.
No. Often didn't relish away days as well. But
that used to annoy me. Like when you'd be getting to Greggs's for the days before I knew what the team was beforehand, and you'd get to the ground and the referee, that's the crowd announcer, would read out the team and you'd be like, "Where's Di Canio?" And then you'd get out, and then Redknapp or whoever the manager was would say, "Oh yeah, he had a little cold this morning," and you'd think, fuck's sake, you know. There was that, but the games he played and the games he was up for, I mean, there were so many, like, that you were literally his shows. Like, you know, that game against Arsenal, where he scored those two goals, we won 2-1, and, you know, obviously the one at Man United and the goal against Wimbledon and so many other games. That Bradford game, where he sat on the pitch demanded to be subbed off and stuff, you know, so many stories about him. And, yeah, an interesting little side story to tell in my section about him.
Yeah, brilliant. Do you remember that TV ad he done for Radox?
Yes, I do, yeah.
That was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy, wasn't it? It obviously didn't work too well because he's got no hair now, but I know it was bubble bath, wasn't it? I think it was shampoo, but either way, it's not done too good to his hairline. I do remember it, and what a man. I think it was the whole...
Didn't do any harm with the women, I would imagine, no, that ad. No, but yeah, no, go on, carry on.
Exactly, I think the whole... that was what was so sort of magical about him as well, is the whole, like, he couldn't have been any more sort of stereotypically Italian, could he?
No.
And he was just like, so like a character, like a sort of, like if ever there was like a film to be made about West Ham, he would have to have one of the lead roles in it, because he was just such a character, such a personality and stuff. And, you know, back in the day when he was at his peak for us, like, he genuinely thought you had a chance in any game we played, because whilst you might not have the best keeper or defence or whatever, with him in the team, you always knew there was a chance that you could at least get a goal or so.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Oh, yeah. Great days, mate. Great days. Well, Paolo wasn't the only ex-player on display in East London on Saturday, because Dean Ashton was our special guest for the last ever event at O'Neill's in Leytonstone. And what an event it was, ex.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant, mate. Really, really good. Dino was a great character. A sad story with him, and I think that's what's interesting with some of these guests. You know, you've all heard about, you know, his goals for the club and how good he was on the pitch, but sometimes it's the stuff that happens off the pitch that fans don't get that insight into. Like, you don't know how hard it was for him when, you know, when that injury occurs. You don't know the full sort of what happened. You don't know the recovery, how it affected him mentally, how it affected his family. And one thing that's really, really good about Martin Allen as host is that he spends time before the events, like the night before, speaking to these players, getting to know them and checking out how comfortable they are talking about some of these things, so when they come to the event they know the questions are coming, so they're prepared their answers. And I think it was really, really interesting with Dean just to hear, obviously, like I say, how good he was, but the side effects of some of that, like some of that trauma he went through with the injury and so on.
I know, it had a bit of everything, didn't it? And that's, I think that's what Mad Dog brings 100%. He gets the right balance between humour and opening someone up, making them feel comfortable and getting that honesty from them. And that's why I think these events are special. That coupled with the atmosphere that the fans generate, I love them. And we've had some fantastic times at O'Neill's. And whilst I thanked them on Saturday on stage, I think we should do that publicly as well. I think they've been an absolute pleasure to work with, professional, flexible around us in terms of what we needed to make the event work. And we've never had a bad event there. We've just had so many great times. So we'd like to thank them. But it is a new chapter for us, as we've already told you. It's an exciting move to the Colour Factory in Hackney Wick. And our first event will be before the Sheffield United game. And we are delighted to announce that Ian Bishop will be joining Mad Dog on stage for the live interactive Q&A. One to look forward to, X.
Oh, yeah, and Ian Bishop is exactly the same as the two guests we've had before, in Martin Allen, Dean Ashton and Trevor Morley, because, like Trevor Morley, it's the same incident. There's a lot with Ian Bishop that is extra to just being a very good player for West Ham, and there's stuff that has happened more recently to him as well that's not probably as publicly known, but Martin's already spoke to him, and he's prepared to talk about those sorts of things as well. So I think it's going to be a really, really interesting story, and even if you just take all that sort of extra baggage away, look at what he did for West Ham, signed for West Ham in, what, 1990 under Lou Macari, and with Trevor Morley for exchange for Mark Ward, and then went on to play, what, 9 years all through the 90s at West Ham, and again at his peak, so, you know, maybe like early to mid-90s. What a player, brilliant passer, really good vision, scored the odd good goal, and yeah, like that midfield at the time. Now, with him, Moncur, Martin Allen, Don Hutchinson knocking around, there are some very talented players in there. And when I was a kid growing up, Ian Bishop was definitely one of my favourite players to be in the playground. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing him again.
Well, I named my dog after him, Bish.
Oh, of course, yeah.
You know, what a fantastic dog. Shit at football in comparison to Ian, but, you know, lovely
just,
dog.
Just as hairy.
Yeah, just as hairy. Just as hairy. And you know, Bish is a fantastic fella. Like, he's a lovely it's man. He's got a brilliant sense of humour. The only thing I'm a little bit worried about, and I'll be open with everyone, is whether there's going to be enough beer left for everyone else with Bish beer. That's my only concern.
Yeah. No, it's interesting how he's set up as well for this new event, because what we should stress is that obviously our previous event, a lot of the focus was obviously the player and the guests and so on, but was around the all-inclusive drink. Now, for those of you that benefited from that, that is still an option. You know, that hasn't gone. But for those that are sort of more in my camp than in Dave's camp and don't drink as much, the entrance fee has been adjusted to have a ticket now, which is just entrance, and you pay for your own drinks, which is obviously cheaper than the one that includes your inclusive option. So for those of you that might have been a bit put off by the fact that you thought, well, 25 quid for patrons, 30 quid non-patrons, I'm not going to drink that much, so I'm not going to get value for money like others, well, now that's been solved as well. So hopefully we'll see a whole new host of people coming, plus those people that have been so loyal and supportive to us over the 7 years that we've been doing these.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, at the end of the event, it's less than a 10-minute walk to the stadium. So it's just selling point after selling point, and we can't wait for this exciting new chapter. I just want to finish off on the Man City game, X. What did you make of Kudus when he came on?
Good question. By then, I think the Man City were starting to really flex their dominance at that point. I don't think it was the greatest game from him, but then I'm not judging him on that at all, because firstly, you know, it's against, as we've already stated, the top team in the world. He came on when they were at their particularly peak during that game. I think without having Antonio up front as well, limited his options. Without having Alvarez in defensive midfield meant that Man City had far more of the ball. So he looks like he's got pace, which we already knew. He did a couple of good things. I think he's obviously skillful. You can see all the things that you know he's got. But I think stronger performances are yet to come.
Without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, it's a horrible game to come into, first and foremost. And yeah, it wasn't spellbinding, but there was definitely moments there I thought he's got something about him. He's got something about him, without a shadow of a doubt. And Bowen went up front at one point as well. Is that something we can see more often, do you think?
Yes, I think that's the plan. And I think that's why we didn't sign a forward in the window, because as I alluded to in quite a few updates and podcasts and stuff, Moyes, not only does he have Ings and Mbama as technically forwards as backup, he's also got Bowen, who he sees, I think, long term as perhaps the successor for Antonio. And also there was also talk of Cornet going as a forward, because he's played up front for Burnley in the past and he's in his early career, and you know, let's be honest, he's not getting in on left wing, he's not getting in on left wing back, so there's an option there for him potentially as well. So I think yes, Moyes is definitely going to use Bowen more frequently as the replacement for Antonio, and it almost seems like it's an agreed strategy that Antonio comes off at around 60 minutes, because it's happened in pretty much every game prior to that. And I remember talking to a coach at West Ham, and they said that is how they're starting to manage his injuries and his you know, the fact that he's so explosive to start with and then kind of burns out a little bit. So they are almost having it as a strategy that he's going to go off at around the 60 to 70 minute mark, depending on how the game's going. So, yeah, I think Bowen is going to be the more natural one to sort of replace him, because Ings is a different type of player. Mbama, I haven't seen enough of him to know exactly what type of player he is, but probably not quite as Antonio-like in his play. And Bowen would probably be the most similar in terms of pace and explosiveness and making runs at the defender. So, yeah, I would agree that that's probably the long-term strategy.
Yeah, and we know he can do a job up front as well, which is why, you know, I don't think there was as much panic from my part that we didn't sign a striker. Like we said, it would have been nice, but we have actually got so many options. When you consider we only play one up front, I mean, we've got, what, five striking options? You've got Antonio, Bowen, Cornet, Mbama, and Ings, unless I've missed anyone. You know, that's plentiful, really, when you play with one up front. We've got two games this week, starting with our Europa League campaign at home against Bacca Topola. And whether I pronounce that right, we'll find out on Thursday. What sort of a team do you expect us to put out against them?
I think it will be quite heavily rotated, and that's what I agree with. I've looked into them a little bit because I thought you might ask this question, and they are top of the Serbian league. So they are obviously, you know, how strong Serbian league is, I don't know for certain, but they've started the season well, so they're obviously a decent team. But that said, I think we have a squad for a reason, 25 players. We've got Liverpool on Sunday. So for me, this is the weaker out of, I don't want to underestimate them because they're clearly a decent team, but out of the three teams in our group, they are the weaker one. So I think I would rotate quite heavily. Now, obviously, you know Fabianski's going to come in. That's a given. It's like, we do this, league keeper, cup keeper. So Fabianski will come in. I would bring in Kerra to go right back. I would play Mavropanos and Ogbonna at centre-back and Cresswell at left-back. So that's a complete change in the defence there. In midfield, I would bring in Fornals. I would bring in Benrahma to start. I would bring in Kudos. I'd bring in Cornet. And I would probably play Ings and Mbama maybe up front, or play one of them and bring Connor Coventry in as a defensive midfielder. But I would certainly pretty much rotate the whole 11, I think.
Yeah, I know, mate, you're right. Because shortly after that, it's another tough game in the Premier League. This time it's Liverpool at Anfield. I make you right that they're not the kind of powerhouse they maybe might have been 2 or 3, 4 years ago. But it is still a tough game. How do you feel about it?
I think we can get something from it. If we set up how we did against Brighton away, and how, you know, we played against Chelsea and even for parts against Manchester City, I think we can get something. I think we could get a draw from that game if we set up how we did. We can't do what we did last season, though, which is dominate the game and then just show them way too much respect towards the end and start going for the draw. You know, we need to just go out to win this game like how we did against Brighton and Chelsea and see what happens. You know, if we lose, we lose. It is Liverpool after all, and you know, they've won at the weekend and they've had a decent start to the season, but I still think they're, like I said earlier, they're not the force they were a couple of years ago. So I think if we can go out and put our very best performance in, I think we can come away with a point from there.
Yeah,
well, hopefully more.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those games again, and I've said this before, you know, with our style of play, I can fully accept that style of play against a top six side, for example. And Liverpool is exactly that because it suits it. It invites pressure that you're going to be getting anyway because they're more possession based than we are. And if we can just hit them on the counter attack and be clinical in front of goal, then we could get something. You're right. But again, you always take that risk when you invite that amount of pressure. And then it comes down to how clinical are they? So it's one of them, and it's typical of West Ham. You never really know what to expect. You do in terms of the style of play. How you're going to deliver against that style of play kind of remains to be seen, doesn't it? But we have been solid so far. I think it is maybe a relatively decent time to play them. And, you know, we could cause an upset, and let's hope we do.
Well, also, what you've got to bear in mind as well is that Liverpool will also be playing in the Conference League on Thursday, which is good because on times we've played teams on the Sunday that have had a week off. You know, Liverpool will be playing in the same tournament as us. You know, that's a good factor. And I also think, as I said, with the European game, if we play that team now, there we should look to beat them, even with our reserve team. They should be stronger than them. But if they come up and they fall apart, have players on the subs, you can make on the bench, you can make enough subs to change it. And also, if we muck up at the start, there's still enough games to qualify from that group. So my prediction, what, for both games?
Yeah, go on, give us both games.
I think we'll win the European game. I think we'll win 2, maybe 3-0 in the European game. And I think we'll draw. Did I have to go 0-0 or 1-0? We'll draw 1-0 against Liverpool.
Yeah. Do you know what, mate? Honestly, I always want to try and disagree with you sometimes with some of the things we talk about and score predictions, and I'll back that up in a minute with what I'm about
that's to say. Unbelievable, isn't it? I'm glad you mentioned that.
Mate, I mean, the actual predictions league, and there's hundreds of players playing this, by the way. Me and X are locked on exactly the same point.
It's just ridiculous.
560 or something like that?
Yeah, yeah, something like that.
Insane.
It's ridiculous. And we did this a load last season as well.
Yeah,
where
I know. It's
the same points. And because the thing is, it's so many variables, because you've obviously got the West Ham score and yellow card and so on is worth double. So you've got that at play. You've also got, you know, if I say, I don't know, a team's going to win 2-0 and you say a team's going to win 3-0, that makes a difference to the points as well, whoever's yeah. most closest. And then you've got the yellow card and the first team to score, that makes a difference. So to be after, what is it, 5 games now, isn't it? Yeah, to be on the exact same points, it's ridiculous.
It's madness. And on that note, it won't surprise anyone for me to say that I'm going to agree. I'm going to go with a 3-0 win in the Europa League, and I'm going to call a 1-1. Now, I can sometimes be a bit too pessimistic with West Ham away from home, and I think I've got to stop doing that. I've got to give the lads a bit more credit than I do, to be honest. So I'm going to go for what I believe is an optimistic 1-1 as well with Liverpool, which would be a great result, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You definitely take that, you know, a point at Anfield is always a good point. So, yeah, you definitely take it. I mean, I think we should be looking to go for the win, but ultimately if it ends up as a point, then great. And then we've got, Sheffield United after that, where you would be looking to get the 3 points. I mean, I think the fixtures after that, obviously you've got Lincoln in the cup as well, but I think in the league, you've got Sheffield United, you've got Newcastle, which bit hit and miss at the moment. Newcastle, I think, Aston Villa away is a tough game, but then after that you got Everton, you got Brentford, and you got Forest and Burnley, and then Crystal Palace. So there's a good run of teams that, you know, if we're going to do something this season, then they're the games that we need to get the 3 points. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting few months, definitely. And I'm happy with how we started the season. Of course, yeah. We lost at the weekend, but I'm sort of almost writing that off now. I think it's been a good start, and now we've got the difficult task, which we've had for 3 years now, of juggling Europe with a league campaign, plus the fact that the cup competitions are back now as well. So it is tough, because everyone has the same amount of players in their squad. Obviously, you're there to register them. You can use academy players, but ultimately, we don't have... The teams that don't have Europe don't have the commitment to have to play as many games, and obviously that is going to have an impact in terms of fatigue and injuries across the season.
Well, you would think so, because it's logical, isn't it? But interestingly, I remember when Antonio was asked this question as a member of that squad, and he said it doesn't impact it and it shouldn't impact it. And he said, you know, when we've done as well as we did in the Europa League, look at our league finish in the Premier League. And that's coming from a player. So I don't really know what to think, to be honest with you.
But I mean, in terms of the likelihood of getting injuries, just by having the sheer calculation of more games equals more chance of injury, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Because it's just logical. If you're sitting at home watching TV, although knowing us, if former players, it's probably just as dangerous. But if you're sitting at home watching TV, it's far less likely to get injured than you are playing a game of 90-minute football, aren't you? So in terms of that, that's an obvious calculation that would mean that it's harder, and it's all about the rotation. You know, yes, back in the day in, you know, the 80s and maybe the 90s, you wouldn't rotate squads very often. And, you know, older players will say, yeah, well, I played 50 games a season when I was a player and I was never injured. But the standards of levels of fitness and professional athleticism wasn't the same. You know, most of those players would admit that they went out on a Friday and got battered and then turned up hungover for the game on a Saturday. You know, and whilst they were still great players, it was probably just as entertaining to watch that football then than it is now. You couldn't do that now, because everyone else is such a professional athlete and so fine-tuned that if you did do that, and it's the same with playing 50 games in the season as against someone that's only played 25, it would make a difference now because of the level of professionalism and athleticism of the current players. Back in the day in the 80s, they only had all clubs had small squads which they didn't rotate very often. happened. So everyone was on a level playing field. But now it's not like that. The professionalism is so intense that if you're not professional, then you get found out. And it's the same as fatigue. You know, if you're playing that many more games, I would say you're going to ultimately find it harder than a team that has played less. So it's all about rotation, and that's why Man City and teams that have such good squads can do it easily, and that's why they do it. You know, Guardiola often changes his team. You know, it's very hard, particularly in defence, to predict who's going to play for Manchester City, and that's because he keeps everyone fresh. There's obviously a reason he does that.
Yeah, I mean, you would like to think, to slightly counter-argument that, because I do agree with a lot of what you're saying, but then in terms of squad depth and availability, we're the most comfortable we've been in a long time. And I think that going into this campaign, whilst our squad quality isn't as good as Man City's, for example, it is still very good. And you'd like to think it's good enough to deal with.
Yeah, that's why we've got to. That's why that's
rotation, you're spot on, by the way. Yeah, rotation's key.
And that's why with this European fixture, whilst in, you know, maybe 3 years ago when we first got into the Europa League, it would have been ridiculous to change all 11 players because you'd have been bringing in players that just weren't anywhere near the standards of the ones you were taking out. But when you look at the players that you're going to be bringing in, you know, there's been the whole debate already about who's better, Fabianski or Areola. So that's, you know, equal ability almost. You've got German international at right back. You've got your new signing, Greek international at centre back, alongside an Italian international who's been a great servant for the club, as well as the left back who's been a great servant for the club. And then you go into the midfield, Benrahma, you start him. He was runner-up Hammer of the Year last year. You start Fornals, who scored the winner in the semi-final and has been a great player for us over the years. You start Kudos, I would say, who's your star signing in the summer. If you play Danny Ings, who's a proven Premier League player, so these are a lot higher quality rotated players than they would have been 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay, it's that time again.
Calling all West Ham fans, are you a patron of the West Ham way? If not, why not? For the price of a pint, you get top quality content on a daily basis, to include the famous West Ham Way podcast with Dave and X, over 100 interviews with ex-players and celebrity fans, Mad Dog Bites with Martin Allen, a show with Tony Cotty, the U Irons podcast, the West Ham Way USA, a transfer window show with Demis Sheff, and expert pre-match analysis. There are virtual events with ex-players, written articles, match day discussion, away day burger reviews, in-depth match reports, and if you want to be the first to get reliable, accurate, exclusive news on all club affairs, you'll get exactly that from the best ITK in the business, ex-West Ham United employee. All that and more delivered to your phone for a fiver a month. It's the daddy.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.